Hey everyone, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. We have Aish. I'm just going to jump right in and ask him to introduce himself, tell us a little bit about who he is, what he does.
Hey everyone, I'm Aish. I'm with Retro Handhelds. I'm one of the reviewers amongst other things that I do for the channel. Mainly though, my focus is on the videos and currently on the social media, well, not social media presence, but the thumbnails, the look that we try to put out there. So that's mostly my role with RH. Been doing it for about a year now. Actually, I think it was just a year officially. I got this notice on my phone saying, hey, a memory from a year ago when I got my first device for review.
Oh, cool. Okay, good. So we're right on the anniversary. All right. So let's jump into that. So what are you doing at the moment apart from RH?
Apart from RH, it's just work. I do martial arts on my spare time when I'm not with family. So pretty much okay. I'm busy all the time. But RH right now, between work, family, and RH, that's it. I don't really have a whole lot of spare time after.
Oh, okay.
With as much as we're trying to do with RH, it's basically a full-time job on its own now. So.
It's grown, hey? It really has grown. What did Stubbs say? You're at how many thousand members on the Discord now?
The Discord, you know what? I'm not sure. I know last time I checked, we were over 25,000, so I'm sure it's higher than that.
Yeah.
The YouTube channel is at about 37,000, I believe. And we're going full in on the website now. So we have that going as well, which we're trying to get those numbers up. So it's kind of basically output everywhere. At some point, people are just going to get sick of us because wherever you look, we're going to be right there.
Yeah, but that's good. You know, I think for many of us, I think the Retro Handhelds Discord is just synonymous with the Retro Handhelds community as a whole. That's what it's like for me. I think you guys are doing a great job of just making, you know, it's a thing of, I know that you guys are building a business, but it's also just a community, you know, and I think you guys are doing a great job of building that.
Well, that's one of the biggest things that we try to make sure we maintain. Like, yes, we want to build a business. We want to, our goal is to do this for a living if it's possible. But at the same time, we don't want to lose what brought us here, because just like everybody else, basically, I found the actual community of the handhelds when I found RH. Before that, it was just me trying to figure out how to get games running on my RP2 on YouTube. That's it. So eventually I found Retro Handhelds, and I think Stubbs mentioned this, that I was like, what's a Discord? I don't know what this is. But it looks really cool. There's a bunch of people there. I want to hang out here. And that's how I found it. So we don't want to lose that ever. That's what RH is. I think that's what brings people in. It's not so much about what we're trying to put out there. That's important, of course, but it's the community that we're trying to give everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I value it. It's just a great place to, it's kind of bridged now to a point where it's just a great place to connect with like-minded people. And I think that's, it's cool that people can connect from across the world and just find a common interest and then just talk about random crap, you know?
Well, that's the idea. That even now what we're doing, at first it was just, we're going to bring people together. Now it's like, we're trying to create a hub as well for YouTubers. It's like smaller channels and some of the bigger channels too. To be able to come in here and we can all hang out. If we all want to grow, that's one of the best ways to do it. You surround yourself with like-minded individuals and you share ideas. You bounce things back and forward. Because, you know, you might be trying to make your videos a certain way and nobody's really telling you, hey, man, maybe if you try this, it might help you do X and Y. And then you hear somebody that's doing the same thing as you say that, and he's like, oh, man, you know what? That's a really good idea. Or we can even share things. Like, let's say you wanted to cover something, but you don't really have the means of doing it. Well, maybe through networking, you're going to be able to do that. Like, a tech dad just did that with me. He just out of nowhere sent me a message. He's like, hey, you want to cover the 1xFly? And I was like, yeah, dude, I want to cover the 1xFly. Well, so he let me borrow it for a few days. Things that we wouldn't really be able to do if it wasn't this community of not just content creators, but just people in general.
That is cool. I'm really enjoying it. So I wanted you to share, like, I feel like in this little community, we all have a bit of an origin story with how we got into retro gaming, maybe a favorite game that you wanted to play or whatever. You know, for me, it was, I got a Famicom clone. It broke. I was sad. I went onto YouTube, found a retro game core, decided to buy the RG350M, and there I was playing Darkwing Duck, and I was happy, you know. So what's, do you have a little story like that?
Yeah, I think at some point all of our stories end up with, then I found Retro Game Corp, because that's what happened to me too. For years, I was mostly just emulating on my phone. I'm a big RPG guy, and I was mostly playing things like Dragon Quest, okay, Pokemon games. So the easy 8-bit, 32-bit stuff that you can play in a touchscreen, which isn't the right way to do it, but it was available. And then one day I'm going down the YouTube rabbit hole like I usually do, and I start seeing these retro handhelds, just little portable emulators. And I was like, man, what is this? This is awesome. Because I, for the longest time, I'm like, what if somebody just put like controllers on this phone? That'd be great. And then somebody pretty much did that. But
yes,
well, I found it when the pandemic started. So we were in lockdown, and I'm in Mexico. So the prices here for those handhelds were way marked up. So everybody's talking about how this is like, oh, it's $100. Like, that's a really good deal. Well, if we're in Mexico, if I wanted to get that, I'm going to be paying about triple that. And I was like, man, you know what? It's really not worth it for me to pay that much money when I can just do it on my phone for now. Then one day I'm on Facebook Marketplace because I have nothing else to do. And then somebody posts an RP2 for sale. It looked like one of those Amazon like the resellers that just gets like the boxes, and it just happened to be there. Immediately messaged the guy, and he's like, yeah, it was, I think I paid $70 for it. Brand new. Okay. And I get it, and I'm really excited until I press the buttons, and I'm like, wow, this doesn't feel good at all. This is not a good experience. Okay. But still, you know, it's like, this is amazing. I've got my first handheld. I go on YouTube again, and then Retro Game Corp's Russ did a video on Lineage for the RP2, and we were talking about retro handhelds, the Discord. If you go on there, you can find it. So I found it there through his video, and then did Lineage on it, redid the buttons on it. Had my wife help me with a little bit of resin to make the D-pad a little bit taller. So I just modded it like crazy until there was something that I enjoyed doing. And a couple months later, I ended up messaging Stubbs because he was selling a 351V. And I had seen that one. That's the one I really wanted because I'm a Game Boy kid. That was my thing. So I bought a 351 from him, and somehow it went from, I just got a handhold from Stubbs to, hey, you want to make a video on the Win600 SteamOS?
So it always happens.
It escalated very quickly. And then out of nowhere, I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And I should maybe take a step back here. He asked me to help him with Facebook group first. So I was helping with the Facebook group.
He told me about that. Yes.
Yeah, I had two fitness groups before that. One that I was just a mod on that I helped grow, and then we got sick of that one, because, and then we started our own, and that thing blew up. And at that point, the mods it basically runs itself now. So they really didn't need me doing a whole lot. And I was like, yeah, dude, I would rather talk about handhelds. So I helped him with that. Got the video, and then every time he would ask me, like, hey, can you do this? I was like, yeah, even if I don't know how to do it, I'm like, I'll figure it out. I'll do it. Yeah, let's go. You want help with Twitter? I don't know Twitter, but yeah, let's do this. Got that video in. Sorry, got the 1600 in, and he's like, yeah, we have Premiere. You can use Premiere. I've never edited a video in my life. So as I'm doing that, I have Premiere opened up. I recorded everything on my old
phone. How to edit a video.
That's not even kidding. That's exactly what I did. And then I just kind of went through it. It was like a 30-minute video. I put it out there, super nervous, and didn't do too good, but it was my first experience with it. And from there, just kind of kept going on. And
cool.
That's kind of what I've been doing with RH. Like, hey, do you think you can do this? Like, yeah, let's go.
Okay, cool. Yeah, well, I mean, you're doing a great job. And I don't know if I've watched any of your older videos, but I mean, I'm sure you're improving and enjoying it the ride as you go.
Turns out I really like video editing, and that's not something I expected. Because again, the first time you open one of these things, it's like, what are all these buttons? What do I do? Like, I was just cutting and moving stuff around and maybe adding some music. That's all I was doing. Now I'm trying to get into color grading and messing with the audio and all of that. Because get really deep with it. And there's like a certain look that I like in videos, and I'm trying to replicate that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. Yeah. Because, I mean, that's my field. Like, that's what I do in my business and my daily life. So yeah, we must keep in touch. We can chat about a lot of things.
I would love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause, I'm not using it today, but I generally use a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 4K. So like, it's just such overkill. I'm doing YouTube with a cinema camera and I'm grading raw video and it's just crazy. But you know, when you enjoy it, it actually, for me, it adds to the experience. You know, like for someone maybe like Stubbs, he would hate it. But for me, I enjoy it.
I think me and Stubbs just casually balance each other out on a lot of these things. Like there's things he doesn't like. There's like, okay, that's all good. I enjoy doing it. And actually, yeah. Now that you mentioned Blackmagic, my last video, I just switched over to Resolve. And the first three hours, I was like, well, I don't understand this. I almost went back to Premiere right away, but I was like, no, I keep seeing people talk about how good the color grading is on Premiere. Mm. I'm sorry, on Resolve versus Premiere. So like, no, I'm gonna stick this one out. Like, I gotta figure it out. And I'm really liking it. Mm. So hopefully I can develop a little bit more on that side.
Yeah. I used Premiere for a while. I got a friend to like call me and we sat for hours and he showed me everything he knows. And I switched quite quickly to Resolve. Like I used Resolve for a couple of weeks and I don't know, it just clicked for me. So yeah, if you have any questions, I have a guy who edits for me as well on this side. So I'm sure between the two of us, we can help you out.
Oh, I have a lot of questions. I'm definitely going to take you up.
Okay, cool. All right. Okay, cool. All right. So we've actually segued into the next thing I was going to ask you. So what cameras are you using currently?
So I have a Sony ZV-1F. That's pretty much the only camera I have before that I was doing everything with my phone. At first, it was a Pixel 3 XL, and then I got a Pixel 6. Okay. And now I've got this one and it took me a while to figure it out. I was really excited to get it, but apparently a lot of people have problems with this camera and it's kind of a learning curve. There's a lot of things you have to adjust just to get it to kind of play well with recording and all of that. The autofocus was a problem with me, but it's definitely a huge step up from using a phone. And the more time I spend with it, the more I like it. I'm enjoying using it, but that's kind of how I am with everything. The first experience might not be great, but I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to figure out how to use it. I do want to do an upgrade on it. Maybe that's something you can help me with because I know you're into camera.
Okay.
I don't know anything about cameras. This is probably the best camera I've ever had, that in my phone. So
yeah,
I could use some guidance there.
Yeah, well, Sony is a good place to be. I mean, they really are Sony went from nowhere to being one of the top. I mean, competing with Canon is just crazy. So they've done really well. I don't think you can go wrong with Sony. So if you stay in the Sony ecosystem, I think you're good to go. We can talk about this for ages. No one's going to be interested. But with cameras in general, like it's pretty much the more you pay, the more you get. There's a point of diminishing returns, but where you are now, what's it? You've got the ZV-1.
F, yeah, the CB1F.
Okay. And pretty much every step you go from there and then you head into the A6000 series, every step's going to give you more. But it just depends. I mean, like, you don't need in-body stabilization and all those things. So, yeah, we can chat. We'll have a chat in Discord. So, I mean, you must have, like, I suppose with RH, you don't end up with... You don't own all of the devices. Like you don't have like a, or do you have a stack of devices sitting there at your house?
I have a stack of devices. I don't like to part ways with them. I have an attachment. Like every now and then I will, if there's something that I really want to get and I'm like, well, you know what? I can't really justify this expense, but I have this thing here that I'm not using. All right. I've had it for a while. Then I'll put it up for sale. Usually on like the Facebook group or the Discord. And usually a pretty good discount. Like I'm not really trying to profit on them. I'm just like, hey, you know what? Somebody else will get this and I'm going to get a new toy. But I think I have, let's see, just a quick head count here. 4, 7, 10, about 30 handhelds looking at me right now.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. All right. So do you
have a few?
So what are you playing? What devices are you using the most right now?
So there's always a little carousel going on what I'm using the most. Lately, it's been the 405B because I got to do something on it. Before that one, it was a 405M. So there's a, it's usually, okay, what do I have to do content on? I'm going to be using that one. But
yes,
my usual go-tos, it kind of rotates between three. It's either my Steam Deck, my G Cloud, or my Switch. It's those are kind
of loud. Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't, I feel like it's starting to get more love now, but I feel like it wasn't really embraced because of that price. But I've seen some people say, hey, I got this for $199. I've got this for $250. And what I tell anybody is like, if you want a big handheld that's comfortable and you can get it at that price, jump on it. Mm-hmm. It's going to outperform all of the T618 devices. It's going to be a beautiful screen. It's super comfortable. The D-pad isn't the best, you know, but it's completely serviceable. It's just, it's a really good handheld. I mostly use it to play my...
It's got that huge screen.
Yeah, that's why I stream with it.
Yeah, I would have thought the G Cloud would have made it here, like do a global release, but I just never made it here. We've got the ROG Ally, which we can buy locally, because I mean, all these devices are, you know, we can't buy here in South Africa, but I would have thought the G Cloud would have made it here. But yeah, what Stubbs didn't realize is I can't buy a Steam Deck. So that's one of the reasons these budget Windows handhelds have a market. Like for instance, the Loki Zero and even the Win 600, why certain countries were buying them, because even now I can't get a Steam Deck. I just can't. I mean, now meeting all you guys on that side of the world, I could probably just get it posted to one of you and then you could post it to me, but are they out of stock for you guys, or is it just because I'm browsing from South Africa?
It's probably that. I think they're out of stock from the refurbished units, but the Steam Deck should still be available. They put it on.
It just says none. So it must just be because I must put my VPN in on and see if I
can. Yeah, that's probably what's going on. If it's not available for you, it's probably just going to say not in stock. That's something that happens a lot where we're US focused. So, and US and UK pretty much they can get most of these devices, but the Steam Deck is one of those that unfortunately just isn't available. And it's funny that you say with Sumeru, because that was one of the main arguments for the Win600 at the time. It's like, well, yeah, the Steam Deck is going to be more powerful and the controllers are better, this and this, but most of the world can't get it. That's it. So for a lot of places, you know, the Win600 was a good alternative. It's still pretty much the only, up until the Loki, it was the only budget Windows handheld. Now, if somebody can't get the Steam Deck and they want a Windows handheld, just get one of the Loki, because it's going to be a better experience all around. So just go with that. But for a long time, that was a real option for most people. If you wanted some type of Windows device, get that one. It's just, it's unfortunate that the sticks are in the worst possible spot for it, you know, but it's an experience, you know.
It's an experience.
Thinking with that one. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. There's rumors of the Win 701 and stuff. So we'll see what they come up with, because now they got stiff competition with the Loki.
I hope they do.
Oh, really?
I really hope
you have, the 701 you have opinions.
The thing. Yes. Yes, I do. I think Avernic should really stay in its lane with the things like that. And I'm a fan and I like what they do. But if they can't come in under that price, then it's just not even worth it. Like the 7840U market is getting really saturated. So just throwing another one out there that's going to be $700 to $1,000 just doesn't make a lot of sense for them. Not when they have such a strong presence in that like budget market. That's better. Yeah. And Windows handhelds are a lot of work. Like I've been reviewing a few of them and it's not like grabbing something like this where you're going to grab it and within a couple hours you're set to go. A couple minutes, not a couple hours. Windows handhelds.
Yeah.
It's a pain. You got to do a lot of things and you got to make sure the company making them is going to get it right. Because even manufacturers that have been doing this for a while still don't get it right. Like look at the Arg Ally. Like they had issues and all they do is PCs. So I would rather just see them maybe take that idea of that bigger handheld and put some type of Android or Linux OS on it and just kind of run with that. Maybe that'd be a...
do what you do best kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, because if they don't, I think someone like Retroid will beat them to the punch because, you know, I'm kind of jumping the gun here, but you think what's next for Retroid, you know? And I think to myself, I think the RP4 is going to be, I don't know, you might know more about this, you might know more about the rumors, but I feel like the 4 is just going to be the same with a better chip and better controls. But eventually they're going to do bigger screen, bigger everything. And then it's, you know, if Ambernic don't go that direction, they're going to miss out, I think. Yep. There's a nice big well-made Android device that can stream, that's got good controls. I mean, those sticks on the RP2S are just so good. So if you could get that in a bigger, better device, I think that's definitely the way things are going to go. I asked, what's his name? Chris on Twitter from Retroid. It is Chris, so, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's tight-lipped. He said he doesn't know, but I think he does.
I can give you anything. I'm sure he does, but they can't really say anything. But if you look at the cadence of releases, we're most likely going to see the RP4 before the year's over.
Yes.
And we already kind of got a leak for what it could potentially be a few months ago. I don't know if you saw it or if you remember. There was, it was before we got the flip, there was a leak for the RP3S, I think it's what it was called. So it was a bigger display, a little bit of a bigger handheld, more powerful. There was a lot of rumors of it being a D900, but nothing was confirmed. And then it was around the same time we got the leak for the Retreat Pocket Vertical handheld, which we still haven't seen anything about that.
Oh, yes.
I got the flip.
I don't know if that'll materialize.
I don't think so either. I hope not. But then we got the 2S, and then we kind of forgot about those, but the leaks are out there. And there's no way they're just going to stop. You know, we're definitely going to get that. We're not going to get a T618 again, because I think they're actually not making that chip anymore. So what we've got.
Oh, I see. So we're going to run out of them soon. Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So that's definitely going to, that's on its way out. So when it's fine, but I think we're all kind of worn out on it. So yeah,
we're done.
Probably.
With that.
Yeah. End of the year, that's going to get announced, and you'll probably see it earlier next year. That's just kind of usually how it goes.
Yeah, every time there's a new release, I'm like, okay, now this is the ultimate. I'm so happy they made this. And then they do something new, you know, so we'll see how it goes.
There's usually something wrong with it. You're like, oh, this is so close, but...
Yes.
It's like the 3 Plus, like, oh, it's so close, but why start and select up here? And I don't have analog triggers, and give me a couple hotkeys. Like, the 3 Plus was so close to
being Yeah.
I think they do it on purpose.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, the start and select, man. But it's these little quirks that actually end up making you love a device, because you kind of work around them, and then eventually that becomes the charm of the device, and then you just grow to love it, you know?
Yeah.
So we've already kind of touched on that, but so do you think, well, you've kind of already answered it, but do you think we've already gotten the best device of the year? Do you think there's a device that's already been released that's in the running for best device of the year? Or do you think it's going to be released for the, you know, just pre-Christmas?
We've got some good options for best device of the year, but I don't think we've seen like the one yet. Like, well, we've seen... even pictures and rumors of there being a 405P coming from Amberneck. And then I'm 90% sure we're going to get something else from Retroid, something better and something a little more powerful. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's still coming right now. If you were to say, what's the best device this year, I'd say it's between the 405M and the 2S, one of those two, depending on kind of what you prefer.
Yeah, because the Retroid Pocket 3 Plus was technically released last year.
Yeah.
So you said the 405M and the?
And the 2S.
Yes, the 2S. Yes, I agree. Yeah. What did you think of that device? How did you enjoy it?
I really like it. I haven't covered it yet. It was... If the screen was a little bit bigger, that'd be it. That'd be the one for me, because I'm too used now to a 4-inch screen. So kind of going back to that 3.5, just kind of, it's not the easiest transition. But everything else, controllers, the sticks, the analog triggers, the feel of it, and there's subtle changes in like how the buttons feel and everything that make it feel more like a I don't want to say premium, but more like a first party handheld. Mm-hmm. Than other options. Yeah. So yeah, they're definitely doing a lot right with it. It's just, if we can get something like that with a little bit of a bigger screen. Yeah, I really like it. I have to do something with it. I'm not sure how I'm going to cover it, but it should be coming by next week.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that was basically my conclusion with my review, is it's pretty much one in terms of craftsmanship and everything. It's one of the best devices around. It's just in 2023, a screen of that size, like that huge bezel, even though it's an older design, It hasn't dated, you know, it's a clean brick style. That's not going to date a lot. It's just that huge bezel that ages it. Yeah. I feel like, no, pity, man.
Would have been nice.
But anyway, I still like it. I mean, it's sitting on my bedside. So it is my favorite device right now. Okay, so you mentioned you think that we're going to get an RP4. I'm holding you to that. If you're wrong.
I'm just going to put it out there. I don't know anything that anybody else doesn't know.
Yeah, no, I know.
Just going off of what they do. Because if we don't make this clear, like on Reddit, somebody's going to be like, oh, they just said it's coming and it's going to start. No, I don't know anything. Yeah, I don't know anything that nobody else knows. But just kind of going off what they did. And their actual flagship device there, the RP3 Plus, came out last year. Mm-hmm. So there's no way they're not going to release something better this year. And it came out last year, I think around this time, like towards the end of the year.
I think so.
So we should hear something pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's usually a flurry, to that sort of pre-holidays flurry of devices. I think the RG 405V is one of those. It's like, I think Anbanica got at least one more release before the end of the year, if not two more. So we'll see what Anbanica up to. I don't know. Do you think they're going to do it 405P? I'm not sure.
I hope so. It would be weird if they didn't, because their usual thing is like, we're going to get a metal version, we're going to get a vertical version, and we're going to get a plastic version. And the 405M was a success, even though it's a metal one. And usually the metal ones, from my understanding, aren't as successful as the plastic versions, just because they're a little bit more expensive usually. But they have a winner right there. As long as they fix the D-pad and stick placement, like just put them where they're supposed to go. D-pad up top, stick below, and there you go. That's all they need to do.
Okay.
And we're going to shoulder buttons.
I mean, what is up with the Anbanic? Well, they actually did, because I've been moaning about Anbanic and the shake test, but finally, it doesn't shake.
Oh, no, I mean,
so they fixed it. Oh, okay, because I always complain about the shake.
I put tape on them.
Yeah, but they're not going to do stack buttons on specifically on this design.
It would be so easy to do it. You don't even have to change anything. I have stack buttons on mine. Give me a second.
How'd you do that? I'll
show you. Oh, see if you can see them on camera here. Does it focus?
Is it a 3D printed thing that you put in?
Yes. It doesn't really want to focus on them. Come on.
Yeah.
Work with me. There we go. See? So these are just slightly different heights. And there's nothing.
And it works all right?
And it works perfect.
Okay.
So if you kind of open it up and you see how they're laid out, and you can see without opening it up, the shoulder buttons are kind of interlaced, so they overlap a little bit. All they did is they just changed that design to where the top one would stick out a little bit more and the other one has a lip. So that's it. Tech that has these same buttons. And this. So before that, I reviewed it and I liked it. My complaint was the shoulder buttons. I just didn't like them. You had to do like this weird claw grip. So I put these on there and I started playing it. And up until the 405D, it's the one I was using the most. Like this changes everything for it, because now it feels a lot more like what you get on the 3 Plus. I also put some tape on mine so they don't click, so you won't hear anything.
Yes.
That's something I did, because I don't like the mouse click sound. Not even my mouse on my computer clicks. I just don't like that sound. So they could just do it. And they know
everything.
About this, by the way. Yeah, they know about this. Mm-hmm. Like one of the Embernic reps already saw these and were like, dude, just do that. You don't have to change the design. You just have to print this. And the files are free. Anybody can print them. So come on, Amber, do the right thing.
Yeah.
That's all you gotta do.
Do the right thing.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Interesting. Yeah, I gave the RG405M a hard time. I was being a little bit sort of sensationalist. I don't know if you saw my video, but I was saying how Wolf Den was wrong about this and blah, blah, blah. And I was sort of saying how the RP3 Plus metal version is better. I don't know. I disagree. I think that I like the fact that the Joy-Con is here. I think Stubbs agrees with me.
You
were wrong.
He's converted. He converted.
Has he?
No, I understand. There's an argument for it. There's people that prefer it, and that's valid. I just think because, you can get 3D systems working on this. But the majority of the games that are going to really play well are going to benefit from a D-pad. So 4-inch screen, 4-inch screen. So you're going to have a better time with those games. Not saying the N64 wasn't good, but the variety isn't as big as, let's say, on the N64 category as something like Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, and all of those.
Yeah, so just, which is,
you know.
Yeah.
Because it is such a lovely D-pad as well. It's one of the nicest ones.
Yeah, well, let's see. Though, these sticks, so after using it for a little while, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to give the sticks a chance. And there's one game that I always go back to, and that's Super Mario World. And I started playing it with this, and I played Super Metroid. Those are kind of like my two games that at any point of the year, I'm just going to grab. Mostly more Metroid, though. And I'm just
going to go-to games.
Yeah. And with this, because the sticks are so small, they're short, they don't have that huge amount of travel, I actually don't mind them as much. Because I feel the reason I like D-pads better than analog sticks is the response time is just quicker. It's just from here to here. That's it. That's all the movement I need. If I'm using a big analog stick, it has to travel all the way. So that's kind of, I don't like that for platformers. With these, the travel is about the same.
They're small. Yeah. So they're just a little switch style.
It's just the precision of the D-pad that I like a little bit more.
Just do that.
So the actual...
You're trying to be YouTubers, man. There we go.
Yeah, the hand travel is pretty similar. So it doesn't bother me as much. I'm still... like I said, I'm a Game Boy kid and I Super Nintendo. Yeah. So I want a D-pad.
Okay, so you said Super Mario World being the Game Boy Super Mario World?
So I always go for the Super Nintendo version.
Super Nintendo version of Super Mario World.
Yeah,
okay. All right, so Super Mario World, Super Nintendo. And then Super Metroid, which is also Super Nintendo.
Well, yeah, any of the Metroid games, really.
Oh, really?
Except for the first one. I usually go for Zero Mission versus the original Metroid. But yeah, same game, just better version.
Yeah, it sounds like you were super committed to the franchise. Enjoyed it.
Yeah. I need to get into Prime a little bit more, but Metroid, that's just those games I can just pick up and play. Because if you know what you're doing with something like, let's say, Zero Mission, you can beat it in like 3 to 5 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's a game that's really easy to pick up.
Oh, really?
That's just it's a fun game and you can run through it.
Okay. I'm going to take your recommendation on that. Okay, cool. All right. No, I'll definitely take you up on that. Yeah. Zero Mission. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Metroid Prime. I really love that game. To me, it's like just a masterpiece. Just so well made. So cleverly put together. I really love it. So I'll check out Zero Mission.
So that's one of the games. This is what I'll give Nintendo credit for, is somehow they took what makes the 2D games great and they were able to translate it into 3D without making a mess of things. Because with Metroid, the term Metroidvania, you're going to be re-exploring areas. You're going to be kind of going all over the place and power-ups and all of that. It's really easy to turn that into a labyrinth in a 3D game, whereas that doesn't really happen in a 2D game. But somehow they pulled it off. So if you like
Breath,
you're probably not easy. Really like the Metroid series, like 2D ones.
Yes. I found there's a 3DS Metroid. What's it called? Because there's a couple of 3DS ones. But there's a platform.
Samus Return. Yeah, there's Samus Returns.
Samus Returns. That's the one.
Yeah.
Such a good game. Wow.
It is.
Like the graphics and the gameplay, just the whole feeling of it is really good.
Especially if you turn the 3D slider on. I don't like doing it for most games, but that's one of the few games that actually works really well. And it even has a weird, like almost anti-aliasing effect where you don't notice the jagged ends as much when you're playing it in that 3D mode. But that's one of those games where as soon as I got a 3DS, that's one of the first games that I had to play.
Yes. Okay, cool. Oh, I'm going to... Oh, so many inspirations for
that's
games
a long
to go
game
play right later. I can't get past... I don't know. I get bored and then I stop and then I forget to. Oh, 3DS. I can't save.
No.
So I just end up starting from the beginning if I leave it for too long. So I haven't gotten very far with it. But Samus Returns 3DS. I can highly recommend it. So is your favorite system?
Pixel version too.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah. Have you played a
Pixel version?
AM2R.
AM2R.
Another Metroid 2 remake. So Samus Returns is based off the Game Boy game. for Samus Returns, Metroid 2. And before we got the 3DS version, somebody made a fan-made version of Samus Returns. It's called AM2R, and you can run them on almost any handheld. There's a, like a Linux version of it. There's an Android version for it. So if you want to try that version instead, because it's shorter and it's a pixel, it's more like pixel art. So you can try this because the 3DS was like easily like 15 hours. So,
No, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you've got a wealth of knowledge on games. So what is your favorite system? It sounds like the Super Nintendo, or do you not really have a favorite?
That's a hard one. So I kind of split them up between home consoles and portable and full handhelds. And for handhelds, it's the Game Boy Color. Like, part of me wants to say the original Game Boy because that's the one that kind of started it all for me. I had an NES before that somebody gave me. Okay. You know, it was one of those where everybody's getting a Super Nintendo. I got a hand-me-down NES. And I played that for a while.
But okay,
I got a Game Boy. And hours just grinding away at Pokemon games on that one. But the Game Boy Color...
How many people there?
Oh, yeah. Mm. The Game Boy Color changed it. It was a game changer for me. So I'd say it's probably between Super Nintendo and Game Boy Color. It's kind of hard to pick one.
Okay. Yeah, someone said to me today that Game Boy Color was just the beginning of the end for them. They just, their parents bought them that and changed everything. They just loved it.
Yeah, it was an experience.
Yeah, so I was chatting, because this is a guy in South Africa, and we were talking about sort of our gaming history. And I think it's like this all over the world, where different countries had different devices and different systems that did well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the States, it's mostly Nintendo. Like, Nintendo was huge. But for us, like, we remember the Game Boy, but then we don't remember anything up and then all of a sudden there was PSP, you know, or whatever. Yeah, like everything in between. And we never really got the NES. We got the Famicom from, where was Famicom from? Japan.
Japan, yep.
So I have a slightly different gaming history because of that. I was chatting to a friend from Iceland, and he also says PSP was massive there. He never really played Game Boy.
Yep.
Okay. Whatever game, you know, whatever Nintendo was big at that time, he was rather into the PSP.
Yeah. And that most of Europe was like that too, where Sega and the PSP had a way bigger presence than what you would see from Nintendo. Yeah. I'm really not sure why, because it was still around, but for some reason it just did better there. And the stateside, it was Nintendo.
Yes.
For me, we moved a lot when I was a kid, so I lived in Mexico and the States back and forth a lot. And Mexico was the same way. It was, well, actually, no, I can't really say it was the same way. If you had an actual system at home, chances are it was going to be some type of Nintendo or a PlayStation 1. But most of the time, Nintendo. Down here, the big thing was arcades. Everybody went to arcades.
Mm. That was also big here. I just remember watching and people playing and playing arcade games. That's a huge nostalgia for me, is to discover those arcade games. Sometimes difficult to find because I was really young, so I can't remember the names. So then, you know, I dig through a catalog of arcade games, and then I find something that triggers that. There was just the heyday of arcade games, and there's just thousands.
And I was the weird kid that didn't play fighting games.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So what sort of arcade games were you into?
I was playing a lot of Metal Slug. I would do Metal Slug. Bubble was kind of my thing. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, Kings of Fighter was like the thing. It still is. I think like the time some of the top King of Fighter players in the world are all from Mexico, because it was just that big of a thing here. So if you went anywhere where there was arcades, they were going to be playing King of Fighters or Dance Dance Revolution. That was the thing. And I'm over here, I'm going to play Metal Slug. I'm going to play Bubble Bubble. I'm going to play Shoot 'em Ups. I'm going to play something else. Until I found Marvel vs. Capcom. That's like the first fighting game that I kind of got into. But for everybody else, it was like King of Fighters, which was good for me, because that means the games I want to play were open. So...
Yeah, I see. Suddenly you're triggering a memory. I watched a movie or something, and it was based in Mexico, and the guys were doing this arcade game tournament. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but it's clearly arcade games are big over there.
Oh, yeah. Well, most people didn't have a home system. So we had two options. You were either going to go to the arcade, or we had these places where you could go and you could rent it for like kind of like a cyber cafe. I don't know if you remember those, where you could go and pay like, let's say, a dollar for like 30 minutes of internet access. Well, these places you could go and pay a dollar, or like, I guess it would be like 50 cents nowadays, and you could play a system for like half an hour. So you can go Super Nintendo, you can go Dreamcast, you can go PlayStation, PlayStation 2. And
oh, cool. I don't remember anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a lot of those here. So my first experience with like GameCube, the PS1 and all of those was going to one of those places and trying it out. I was lucky enough to where my parents were able to buy me one. So we weren't always doing that great, like financially, but somehow my parents always found a way to get me like what I wanted to play, which I'm very thankful for the people to do that.
Found a way to keep you entertained.
Yeah, but that's kind of how you would try them out over here. So you would go to one of those places and you would pay, and you would play for a little while. The unfortunate thing is, like, if you were, you couldn't really play RPGs, because let's say you're playing Final Fantasy, and then your time's up. The next person that comes and plays that game, they could delete everything.
Yes.
So you would just try them, but mostly you would go in there and try like platformer games like Mario Sunshine or Mario 64 or one of those, just to play for a little while, get the experience, and then you're out.
Oh, good times, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is all about, isn't it? It's just that nostalgia and those memories. Yeah, I'm trying to find, I keep looking through like the 1944 series, you know, there's airplane games, there's arcade games, but nothing, it's some random airplane game that I played at there was this little arcade game in a little cafe at a campsite that we went to go stay when I was a kid. And I just remember running up and down to my mom, and I don't think she knew what the 20 cents were for. I think it was 20 cent coins. And I was running in and out playing this game, but I can't find it. I've actually got to do a bit of like a deep dive, because I don't think it was a 1944 series. It was just some game, and I was just addicted. Those memories are just great.
Yeah, there's a lot of games like that. Not like the one you were playing. I mean, like, they just have those memories that you just remember as a kid. Like, it felt good. The world was a lot easier. We weren't all stressed out and worried about stuff. It's just like, I just got to beat this level. That's it.
Yes.
That's all that mattered at that time. We didn't know how good we had it.
Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, good times, man. Sheesh. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, I remember going to the cafe down the road, but I just remember some, like, you know, there were all these arcade thingies, the games, but I remember some dodgy dudes hanging around there. I was a little kid and I went with my sister.
Oh man, I have a bad experience with something like that. So when I was a kid, Yu-Gi-Oh cards were huge. And there was this cyber cafe we would all go and hang out, and we would either go there and play like Quake, or we would play, there was an online game called Moo, or we would just play Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Uh-huh. So to get there, though, it was about a 20-minute walk, and we had to go up these stairs. So it was, I'd say, 150 meters of just stairs that you have to go up and down to get from my house to where we would usually hang out. There was always dodgy dudes around the neighborhood where I grew up. This is when I was in Mexico at the time, so it's not abnormal for that to happen. But I think I might have been like 12, and at this time, you know, parents were just like, just make sure you come back when it gets dark and you're fine. There's no phone, all of that. So I'm walking back. I have my backpack. I have all my cards. And this dude just comes up and snatches it away from me and just takes off. Like, that's... After that, I remember I was really nervous about going there, but that's a bad part. But the cool thing is, I go back to the cyber cafe and I tell everybody what happens. The older guys go and try to find this guy, and everybody's like, hey, you're okay, this and that. Like, they can't find him. They come back like, I'm bummed out. I'm like, man, I don't have my Yu-Gi-Oh cards anymore. Like, what am I going to do? And they all got together and they got cards for me. Like, hey, man, here you go. We put this deck together for you so you can keep on coming back.
Oh, shame.
So there was like a good memory there, but those dodgy dudes were always around like arcades or places like that, man. Just it's messed up.
Yeah.
You know, it's
real like scumbags. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a different time. I do live in South Africa and we've got like crime issues here and that, but like, I was just a little kid with my sister. I must have been like 6 years old, and we were just walking down the road to the cafe on the corner. Like, I would never let my kids do that now.
Oh no. So this happened in Tijuana, Mexico. I don't know how much you know about Tijuana.
No, I don't. That's I'm interested to hear. Yeah.
It's not the safest place. And so now I said, I would never let my kids go anywhere, like not even to the corner without my supervision. I just think back to like, what were my parents thinking back then? It's crazy. Like no cell phones, no way getting in contact with me. Like I'm at the house in the morning and this was like during summer break. So I'm not coming back to the SARC. They don't know where I am. It was just a different time.
No cell phones.
Yeah. No, what nothing like that. No,
crazy.
Maybe if you were a rich kid, you had a pager. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. A rich kid.
Yeah. Good times, but it's crazy.
They're good times. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone was saying to me that our kids not like Minecraft is today's Lego. Like they, our kids have the same affinity to Minecraft that we had to Lego. It's like, it's just a different world. Yeah. You know, like my daughter's going onto Roblox to play with her friends after school. It's it's just a whole different vibe to how we grew up, I suppose.
My kid's trying to make games in Roblox. Like I got him a PC, so I upgraded my computer and I was like, oh, well, I have all these parts. I'm going to put one together for you. And it's nothing crazy, but for a kid, it's a pretty good system. And I put Minecraft on it. I put Roblox. First thing he does is like Roblox Studio. He's trying to make games. And
I can only imagine
how it would have been as a kid with that. Because when I was a kid, my toys were Legos and clay. That was it. I wanted to make stuff. So I can only imagine what it would have been like having Minecraft, Roblox and all that back in that time. Man, that would have been... I wouldn't have talked to anybody.
What a world.
Yeah. I wouldn't have any friends. Nothing. It would have just been me doing that 24/7.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it is sometimes I think to myself, cause, who was it that were a famous YouTuber, Mr. Who's the Boss? And he like tells a story of, you know, he putting the blanket over and playing Game Boy and he had the little Game Boy light so that he could see what he was playing. And like, I think to myself, it's all very cute and happy and warm and fuzzy. But then at the same time, I realize we were all getting addicted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, I remember being in the backseat of the car with my Game Boy like this, like waiting for a street light just so I could see. And then just being upset, like
so
unconsolably upset if I ever got grounded and I lost the access to my Game Boy. Just like withdraw. Yeah. I was like, no, like give it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were definitely hooked on those things. I guess we still are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
20 devices in my studio. It's interesting growing up in Tijuana. Like, I don't know. The only thing I know is the movies, and obviously they over dramatize everything. So the one.
Dramatize it enough.
I was going to say they probably overdo the, you know, the gangsterism and the crime and all the things. But so you reckon it's pretty rough?
So I didn't always grow up in Tijuana. We moved a lot, but for some reason we always kind of went back to Tijuana.
Okay.
I grew up, let's say, I'm not trying to dox myself, but I was like in the Midwest from the United States for a little while. And then I was over in the West Coast, and then I was different parts of Mexico, moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. And Tijuana is a rough place. Violent crime rates. It's one of the worst in the world. It's, it's definitely not somewhere I would tell anybody to like, if you have the choice, probably not the best place to raise a family, but, I guess just you adapt, you get used to it. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. If you kind of stay out of the way of certain things, like there's areas of course in the city where you probably shouldn't be hanging out there if you're not a local. And I'm not trying to like make it look that bad, but I'd say, of course, movies are going to oversell it, but it's rough. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We have things like that in South Africa. So we've got some pretty bad press in terms of the crime and stuff here, but I think what happens is, so like we've had some issues with tourists getting like attacked or mugged or whatever. And the problem is like, if you put a a thing in Google and you want to get somewhere, Google will just take you through the guts of the city, like through the worst of the worst. Like in Cape Town, there's a place called Manenberg, which is just like gangsterism is rife. And like, I remember my mother-in-law stopped at a petrol station in Manenberg. She was new, like she lived here where I live now, but she came to visit us in Cape Town where we used to live. And she stopped at a petrol station in Manenberg and the petrol attendant went to and said, "Sorry, madam, you need to get in your car and leave. Because it's just so dangerous." Oh, it's rough. So no, if you don't know where you're going, then it's dangerous.
Even if you do, let's say like here, I there was a time when the city was pretty rough where you could just be minding your own business and you'd be caught in a crossfire, just shooting out with the cops. And these are, and I'm not talking about just like some guy with a random agenda. This were like fully armed people trying to do some damage. So
crazy.
Just lucky enough to never really have to deal with it directly, but it was always around. You couldn't turn the news on without hearing about it. It's getting a little more stable. I don't know if I'm just used to it or what it is, but it's an experience. Luckily, I move back and forth still, states in the U.S. So I guess I get to see that firsthand, like what the differences really are. If you're in one place, you kind of get used to it. So it's just part of your everyday life. But when you have the chance to see the other side of things, you're like, man, this is an interesting contrast.
Mm. Yeah, that is a bit rough. Eh? I see what you mean. Like you're in it and then you go out and then you go, well, life doesn't have to be like this kind of thing.
No,
that is a bit rough. So what do you foresee the future with retro handhelds? Where do you see things going for yourself with that?
With retro handhelds, hopefully within, let's say maybe a year from now, we can just be doing this full time. Like we're trying to be everywhere. Like I said earlier, we have the website going now.
Yeah.
We have the channel, which the channel we're hoping to, it only keeps on growing. And both social media presence is always going to be there. So hopefully we can get big enough to where this is our job, because we definitely want to do, we want to cover more. And so when I first joined, I asked Dubs like, "Hey, what's your vision for RH?" And his thing was, "We want to create a hub for everybody. And the bigger we get, the more challenging it is to maintain that feeling of this is still a tight-knit community when you're already hitting, let's say, 30,000 members. So being able to dedicate more time to that and being able to grow that feeling, that spirit of community is our main goal, besides like the videos and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think one way that you guys are combating that is by creating channels for YouTubers and then creating different like offshoot channels, and then also the fact that you've broken it up into current devices. Those are all creating smaller communities within the bigger community, you know. And then obviously then you've also got people that sign up for the Patreon and then get unlocked, you know, special things, and that creates a little bit of a special community for those people and all that. So yeah, and I actually need to pick your guys' brains on that, because I have no clue how to do all that stuff, man. I just signed up for like perks on my YouTube channel. I just signed up for it, and then I'm sitting going, I have no cooking clue how to manage this. Like I didn't even know what I signed up for. I just know that it was an amount for this, an amount, and people can pay, and then it helps me. And I don't know what I did, so I'm gonna go have a look later and see what I did. But you know, I like the idea of you guys. Like I signed up for your Patreon, and I had I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, well, this would be good to support RH. And then I signed up for the thing, and then I noticed, oh, now I've got a little badge, and oh, then there's these like unlocked little chat groups and stuff.
Yep.
So I need to do that for myself as well. I just don't know how.
Did you enter are you in the Patreon chat now?
I think so.
Okay, because basically, if you go on Patreon, there's going to be an option to link your Discord to Patreon, and that should do it automatically for you.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I see. All right. Well, I'm supposed to be into tech, but I don't know. For some reason, that's all a mystery to me.
I can't take any credit for how good the Discord setup, by the way, because when I first found Discord, I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's really easy to navigate. And I thought that was just kind of the norm. It turns out it's not.
Yeah.
So, there's a whole group of people that make RH work. I'm just a tiny part of it. And the work they do behind the scenes is amazing. Like the amount of time they put into making sure everything's functioning right, and that the community is staying a a civil place for people to just hang out and have a good time.
That's an effort.
Like, it is. And it's definitely not something two or three of us could do. There's a whole team of people behind this. And actually, if you go on our website, you can see all of the contributors we have, and you can kind of get an idea of all the faces behind making RH actually work.
Yes. Yeah, no, Diana, I realize it's quite a big team. Mm-hmm. I wanted to quickly finish off by asking you, because you've mentioned it a couple of times, but I haven't asked you about it. So you said you're pretty into your martial arts. Is that something that you are you a teacher, or do you just do?
No, I train myself. I've always done sports since I was I think it was like 13 years old when I started. So I did football, I did track, I wrestled, and then I thought maybe I could play some college football. It didn't work out, so I kind of went more like the martial arts side. So I was kind of going back and forth. This is when MMA was taking off, so there was a few MMA gyms, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna go there and I'm gonna try it out. And then I ended up just doing Muay Thai for a little while, and then I found jiu-jitsu later on in my life, and I've been doing it for a few years now, 5 days a week. That's the class I had this morning. I was like, I'm going to skip class today so we can go ahead and get this done. So just been doing that. And I think we all have our own ways of therapy, of kind of dealing with, with our everyday problems that we have going on. Me, when I was in high school, I was told I have ADD. So I don't know if I would say it's ADD. I know you have it too. And I'm pretty sure Stubbs has it too. But my thing is,
we've established subsets.
Yeah. Like, I need constant stimulation. Like, I need to have something going on from every angle. Like, even right now, I'm sitting here, I have three monitors looking at me. And a lot of times I'll have, like, if I'm working on something, I'll have something open up here. I have YouTube going on over there. I have Discord over here. I have constant stimulation. I need that in my life too. So what I found is, like, with sports and now specifically martial arts, I have that, because when somebody's coming at you trying to take your head off, you don't have a lot of time to be thinking about other things. And And I'm definitely one of those, like, almost like cult members that will say, like, if you have a chance to try jiu-jitsu, give it a go. Because it's, if you're anything like me and your head tends to wander a lot and you're a creative person, then you're probably really going to enjoy it.
Yeah. So I started running not too long ago. I really love getting out into the, we have great trails here, like really nice trails. So I enjoy that. But then recently, so I did karate when I was young. I did it. I nearly got my black belts and then stupidly quit for whatever reason. I don't know why I did. But now we've just started taekwondo. I've been doing it for about 2 months. It's supposed to be 5 days a week, but the instructor said, listen, I understand you've got two businesses and two kids and you guys are very busy. And so he said, it's fine, you know, two to three times a week. So we go, and, I can totally relate. Like it's an hour of my life where I get told what to do. I get, you know, I get very clear guy. Like it just, I spend my whole life being in charge of everything. And so I go there, I just get instructed to do a thing. And like you say, when a fist is coming towards your face, you don't have time to think about, did I do this? Did I do that? Yep. You know, have I done that thing right? You're in the moment. And I find it very, very relaxing, actually.
Yeah. It is. That's the weird thing. It's like you're going at somebody else, but one thing is you don't have to worry whether a person can handle it or not, because chances are they're better trained than you are. So they know exactly what they're doing right there. And then you don't have time to be wondering about what else is going on. None of that. For that 1 hour to 2 hours, depending on how long you're doing it, your mind is clear. And there's one thing that I've said this, I've talked to my brother about this, and I've said it with other friends, is like, nobody really tells you how to be an adult. You learn how to be an adult from people that weren't guided into how to be an adult either. So basically, we're all just trying to wing it as we go. Together. Exactly. Like our parents, nobody told them like, oh, this is how you do it. They just kind of did it on the go, and we did the same thing. So being in an environment where you have somebody that's teaching you something, saying you do it like this, and like this. But at the same time, once that instruction part is over, you're able to, they tell you, you know what? Okay, we taught you this now, put it together. We gave you the recipes, start cooking, have some fun. then you're able to kind of develop in there. And it's just, it's a really good experience. It's very liberating. It's very relaxing. You're tired at the end of it, which is another thing. It's like, I think everybody, at least a couple times a week, you should end up physically exhausted doing something. Because if not, you're just, this is just me. I don't know if it has any backing, but I think if you're just bottling up all that energy and you don't have an outlet, it's going to start eating you up inside. So you need to find something you can really pour into it and just kind of let it all out. Let your body get tired. Like, we're supposed to get tired.
Yeah.
Be out of breath. You're supposed to be out of breath. Make those lungs work, get around, do stuff. And that's just me. I was a personal trainer and a therapist for years. So fitness was kind of like there in my life. Before COVID, I spent 12 years of my life being a personal trainer to older population and people with pain management. And I was a neuromuscular therapist for years. I don't want to say I was an athlete my whole life. I was doing sports my whole life. And I firmly believe this. Active. Like, you need to. Yeah, I was active. Exert your body. It's going to thank you for it. Not for any weight loss thing, not for any of that, just for like just that release of get that out there.
Yeah. I agree fully. Like, cause I had been pretty, I mean, being a ADHD person, cause I said to my mom, you know, cause I started running and that, and I'm like, yeah, mom, I'm like so tired that, and I've got all these injuries. And I said, it's from sitting on my ass for the last 10 years. And she said, my boy, you will never just sit on your ass, because like, I'm always moving, but the thing of going and running in the forest and getting completely exhausted and getting in the car and like, all I can think about is drinking water and sitting for a few minutes. Like, I can't, you know, you just release all that tension. It's really good.
Yeah. It's a really good feeling being able to just shut everything else off and being able to focus on just one thing. Like, I took up running during the pandemic too. I was always weights for a long time. It was weights, okay. weights. I was really into powerlifting for a little while. And I was like 50 pounds heavier than I am right now, because that's all my obsession. And then everything got closed down. I was like, well, I can't do that anymore. So I started running, and I got to a point where I was doing like 5 to 10K a day. And it was just, it felt so good. Just get out there and just run. And I live where there's a bunch of hills. Yeah. Everything was up and down. And nowadays it's like, I look at weights and I'm like, I think I'd rather just go run. I enjoy it so much. Cool. Like, actually, my body.
Yeah, that release.
So, so I get what you're saying about running. Running is a great experience. It sucks to get into it, though. Like, the first couple of weeks, you're probably not going to like it. It's not going to be a fun intro. But eventually, you know, it definitely grows on you.
Well, my wife, she's never been a very active person, and she's never done running. And so, like, because it's just something I always did when I was younger, and we've got all these trails, we were like, okay, let's just start running together. And for her, it took her a long time to get into it. And I just encouraged her, and, you know, and eventually she actually started to miss it. Like, so, because I remember in the beginning, she was like, I don't think running's for me. I don't think I'm built for running, all these things. But I think some people are just not built for running, but I think everyone can get something out of it for sure.
You're always going to have outliers out, but if you look at it, not to like derail the podcast from what we were talking about, but if you look at the actual structure of the body and our ability to sweat and how our body manages oxygen and movement, amongst like the animals, we have very little skills that can compare to what, let's say, even a cat can do. But one thing we can do better than pretty much any other animal out there is run. Like, our body's ability to manage constant movement is amazing. It's almost unmatched by anything else. So definitely, if you stick with it, because we're one of the few animals that can sweat. And we can actually process oxygen while we're moving. Now, we're not great sprinters as far as speed goes. We're slow.
Yes.
Like, almost any other animal, like, go try to chase a chipmunk. Good luck with that. Like, you're not built for that. But endurance wise, we can.
Endurance.
And that's how humans used to hunt. You would wound the animal, and then you would eventually chase it down until it can't run anymore. So that's why you can get these people. Not everybody's going to be able to do an ultra marathon, but you can see these people that are running hundreds of kilometers, and you're like, man, how are people able to do this? It's like, well, our system is just geared towards that. Like, we're really good at endurance stuff.
Now, I want to say your name correctly, because I said Aish and you said that'll do, but then it's Aish. Yeah.
It's Aish. Well, it's Aish. It's, you know, technically it's either one. It depends on where you're from. Like if you're from the States, it's Aish, just because of the way you pronounce the letters. If you're from pretty much anywhere else, it's Aish. I'm used to using both. So, and fine.
I like that. It's from anywhere else.
Yeah, it's a Hebrew name, so I'm not even getting it right. It's, yeah. So it's not a big deal. It's Aish or Aish. I answer to either one of those.
Cool, Aish. Thanks so much for doing this. I hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, so everybody who's watching, please check out Aish's videos on the Retro Handiles channel. He does really nice reviews, you know, so when you're checking out the channel specifically, you'll see his videos there. So go check them out.